As an administrator, I've long been fascinated by meeting organization and facilitation. Nothing drives me nuts, like a poorly run meeting that drags on and on, but then ends without any new clarity or action steps. My temptation in those moments is to take charge and keep things moving at a good clip. But in doing so, I can often step on others' toes or not allow all voices to be heard. In short, I can misuse power. A couple years ago, two of my colleagues in the catechesis world introduced me to a different model of convening and facilitating called sociocracy. Joanne Terranova and Trinka Hamill are both longtime parish leaders and conveners of community. Their regional catechetical organization in Northwest Washington State functions in a more organized and efficient manner than any other similar organization that I know of. Yet it is also the most inclusive and joyful. Everyone feels like they have a voice and can make a difference. I asked Joanne and Trinka if I might interview them specifically on what they learned about the power of convening, which is a focus of Chapter 4 in Redeeming Power.
So I'm thrilled today to get to be talking with you, Trinka Hamill and Joanne Terranova. You're the two who really introduced me for the very first time to sociocracy and to thinking about how we can make our facilitation of gatherings a more just and inclusive and yet effective way of continuing to gather with each other. And others have gotten the pleasure of getting to know who you guys are. I'm wondering if you would mind just introducing yourselves and then maybe saying a little bit about how you got involved and why you sought training in sociocracy.
Sure. So my name is Joanne Terranova. I live in a co-housing community, and which is how I was first introduced to sociocracy, that we dabble in it a bit to do our governance here in this intentional neighborhood, I might call it. And in the process of that, was found myself at some point running an organization that quickly grew from 9 members to 20. And the administration of that expanded as well. And what one person was doing couldn't be handled by one person anymore. And so there was a book that came out on sociocracy that I had encountered around that time. And it was like, oh, this is what we need to be doing.
And Trinka, could you say something about yourself?
Sure. I'm Trinka Hamill. And I actually was introduced to sociocracy through Joanne. We serve in the same consortium, regional consortium. And as that membership grew, it did become really clear that to be sustainable without going hierarchical, we needed to find a system that would help us structure ourselves, have really effective ways of communicating, and also have shared decision making. So that was my introduction.
Well, and I recognize that it's something that obviously both of you have done training in. It takes a long time to really be able to lead well. But if you were to give an elevator pitch for it, how would you describe what sociocracy is and how it could help an organization?
I'd say it's a set of tools that we can use to listen to each other and give all people a voice and to make decisions by the people who are most affected by the decisions, yeah, and really to keep communication channels open between all of the operating places, that all the different things. I don't know, what would you add, Trinka?
Well, I think this is partly the effect of doing sociocracy, but I think it also is how an organization might come to it. What we hear from our members from this way of organizing ourselves is that we can all relax in knowing that somebody has eyes on something that affects them, that no one person or no one small group of people has to keep eyes on everything. And I think that's really helped us not only move through the decisions the way we want to, but just to be with one another in that more relaxed way.
So what have you seen in trying to utilize it? It sounds like in a couple different communities that you're parts of. What are some of the benefits of it that you've experienced? And maybe, Trinka, you've already named that, like that when you're together, it's more relaxed. It doesn't feel as fraught. And Joanne, I heard you kind of name that it's inclusive.
And I don't know, I I always, like, when I leave a sociocracy meeting, often I'm like, oh, we made room for the spirit to move among us today. And we created something better than I ever could have done myself. There was one recent meeting that I was at in the last month that we were considering how we might hold our CGS ministry in prayer in our parish. And we came away with four solid avenues of ways that we were going to invite prayer in the community that were directed to four different populations, like our families who are involved in the program and the parish as a whole. But it's like, I never would have thought of all those avenues. But just because we took the time to share ideas and listen and look at all of the dimensions that we needed to consider, we were able to find a really fruitful pathway, I think, and this something that we wouldn't have ever have, you know, somebody sitting in the office running a CGS program wouldn't say, oh yeah, I think I should do this. But, and also I think it really, the tools that you use really build community is something that I've noticed, that the way that we select who's going to have what role really allows people to see their gifts, the gifts that they may not have seen. So, yeah. And it just really, I think, strengthens the bonds instead of, you know, a competition about who's going to be the best.
I was just going to add a couple of things. One is that I think this way of organizing makes visible where power is. And because it does that, I think it invites people into taking on parts of that power that feel like it's a good match for them, rather than the mystery of, you know, how do decisions get made and do I have something to contribute to that? So I've just really appreciated that visibility. The other thing that I really love about this way of proceeding is that when we move into decision-making times during meetings, objections are really invited and embraced, because as we're making decisions, we really keep an eye on what our mission is or what our small group kind of aim is. And through our training, we learn that decisions don't have to be a good match for our number one preference, but they can be a good match for what we can, like, play with and try on and tolerate. So when it comes to somebody who really objects to a decision, it goes right to the mission. And we get to talk about how would this decision keep us from doing what we really want to do? And that's a gift, you know, that's a gift to a conversation. So when there's an objection, I kind of lean in. It's like, ooh, okay, we're going to get into some good stuff here. So, and it's welcomed rather than being a voice that feels like it's pulling away from a process.
What's the smallest size of a group that you could run a process like this with? Because I understand there's a couple different roles that would always be part of the conversation.
I found that it spilled over into lots of avenues of my life. And so in my family of four, when we have our family meeting, it's like, okay, let's do a round. What went well in our family this week? And we just go around and listen to each other. So I think the tools can be implemented in a small group. I've also done it in groups of children, you know, 8 to 10 children, but that are not really connected to any larger organization.
How does the agenda for what you're going to talk about at any given meeting get set? Because it seems like that's a critical thing that has to happen before you first gather.
It's kind of part of the role of several people in the circle. So someone is coordinating the circle of work. A circle is defined by, you know, a group of people who share an aim within an organization. So there can be many circles within an organization. When a circle meets, it's up to the coordinator. The facilitator of the meeting will sometimes contribute to the agenda, and even the note taker. The note taker is kind of watching what's on the backlog, what's coming up, what do we need to review. So it can be a collaborative conversation between two or three people. And then our practice is to have the agenda go out ahead of time. And anybody in the circle, or anybody who's aware of somebody not in the circle who wants to put something on the agenda, we just put it on as soon as it will fit on.
Well, how did you get started? Like, how did you bring it up to a group for the first time? How did you introduce it? And then what did it take?
Yeah. Well, I was really aware of the struggles in our organization. Like if you look at the notes from the annual meetings, like the administrator person was saying, I really need help. I don't know how I can do this anymore. We'll need to. And when I read the Sociocracy book, I was like, okay, this is the answer. But, you know, the same thing I just said, I can't just go say, oh, we're going to do this. So I initiated a, like, I think this is a fruitful way that might work for us. Can we form a study circle and have a group of us learn the tools? And then, you know, and then from that, can that group make a recommendation whether we should try this or not?
And Trinka, I'm guessing you were on the study circle.
She was.
I was on the study circle, and it was a great experience to the organization that we learned Sociocracy through, Sociocracy for All, had some like free videos to kind of learn a little bit about it. But then we signed up for a course to do together as part of our study group. It was an asynchronous course that we did online together. I think we were on Zoom. That was even pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Wow. And we had a little bit of coaching from somebody with that organization once we kind of got some experience under our feet. But that was really helpful. And I think those of us who were part of that initial study circle saw enough benefit from it that we wanted to help move the proposal into the bigger organization. And I think many of us became coordinators of our first circles just to introduce more people to the governance model.
Well, how long did it take you before you began to feel comfortable leading meetings in this way or facilitating meetings in this way? Were there kind of snags when you first get started that you would say, oh, watch out for this? Or if it was easy enough that you felt like, yeah, I think we can do this from the start.
I think the framework is pretty simple, but like our coach said, it's like people, when you get confused or lost, you're going to default to what you're used to doing. And each meeting always ends with a feedback round of, you know, how did this meeting go? An evaluation of, you know, what worked for you in this meeting and what didn't. And I've been called on, yeah, you know, Joanne, we kind of abandoned those round things and I really appreciate those. And so it's, you're always being invited to grow a little bit more and do better, but you know, there's the space there to mess up too.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we were all learning it together mm-hmm. made it easy to try, knowing that we were going to make mistakes, but we were going to learn from them. And that's actually part of the self-evaluating system of Sociocracy, is that risk-taking for the sake of learning and the mission is encouraged. So I'm definitely still learning. I still go into meetings with some supportive documents to help with the process. But I would say that we've been doing it for 2+ years, experimenting with it. And there's definitely a flow to our meetings now, that once people get more comfortable with the process, there's definitely just an ease and a flow.
And do you feel like you're able to make decisions faster and like it's effective? It's not, because one of the things that's hard, I think sometimes is like, I want to hear everybody's voice. I want it to be included. And then meetings end up being like 4 hours long. And what I've seen about Sociocracy that at least is attractive or tantalizing to me is that it both helps everybody's voice to get in there and we actually get more done at the same time.
Yeah, I think we spend in Sociocracy not a whole lot of time like looking for the perfect decision, but we say safe, good enough to try, safe enough for now, or some phrase like that. That, you know, can we make this step forward? And the decisions are always have like an evaluation date attached to them. So it's nothing is set in stone forever and ever. Like, it's like, so we're going to try this for the next 2 years and then look at and see what the benefits and what we might need to change. And but you get to decide what, you know, it doesn't have to be 2 years. It can be 3 weeks or, you know, what yeah. makes them.
I also notice, I think because it's built in that everybody gets a chance to respond, to say something, that as we've gotten into that process, people will sometimes say, oh, what I wanted to say has already been said, or mm-hmm. I'm still thinking,
Can you give an example of a time when you used the process that you felt like it worked particularly well and it led your group to a place that you maybe hadn't imagined that it would? What's the kind of decision that you've brought forward to a group?
I can think of one. This is a bit more mundane, but very much connected to the life of many organizations. I was on the administration circle, and we were coming to realize that the way we were sharing documents was getting super cumbersome, and people had things on their, you know, their home computers and this cloud and that cloud. So we just identified that we needed to explore another system for that. Instead of spending a whole lot of time in the circle meeting, just ask for volunteers of people who would be interested in serving on what's called a helping circle. You bookmark a thing and then you meet separately. So we had a helping circle around organizing documents that just went so smoothly because we knew from the bigger circle what the issue was. And it took several meetings and a fair amount of work, but we were just able to bring that back to the bigger circle and say, here's what we came up with. What do you think? Everybody consented and off we went. So
it sounds like one of the things that's lovely about the approach that you're using is that that things don't fall through the cracks. So things that get brought up, there's actually some resolution to, and there's clarity around action items.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in a circle meeting, we'll take a minute to look at our backlog and identify what's priority. So there is a system for, you know, taking minutes in meetings and always keeping an eye on what we've done, what we've decided, and what we still need to work on.
Wow. And so if people wanted to get started on it, like if they wanted to investigate it more, would you say the first place to turn would be to go to the website?
Yeah, I think that there are different versions of sociocracy, but the organization Sociocracy for All has really made it a way to, I think part of their aim is to make the tools easily accessible to people. And so while you can hire them to do a special workshop for your organization, you can also access the $120 asynchronous system that we did that, and that, you know, even the organization, like, you know, I'm sure that if we said, oh, we can't, because they're always like, you know, range of, they give you some tools to decide if you're a well-funded organization, you know, this is what you might pay. And if, you know, you're underfunded, this is what you might consider paying. Or,
wow. That's great. Thank you for that resource. That's very, very helpful. And you mentioned also a book.
Yeah, Sociocracy for All does have a book called Many Voices, One Song.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there is also a book called Let's Decide Together that is on sociocracy with children.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Wow. Joanne, from as long as I've known you, which has been well over a decade now, I mean, yes, this has been the passion for how does one build community has been
right, yes,
core to you for as long as I've known you. And Trinka, I would say the same thing for you too. I mean, this is something you've cared about long and hard. And it sounds like for you, sociocracy has been something that has helped you to realize almost like at a vocational level, who you're called to be in the world.
I think that's true. I think it's, for me, it's been a great experiment into working on common goals outside of a hierarchical model and, you know, calling each person's gifts forward has been just an amazing thing. There are people in roles who would never have chosen to be in that role if they had to step forward, but because of the process, you know, other people in the circle might have said, I think you'd be really good at this. And this is why. And then for that person to say, I don't see that in myself, but I trust you all and I'll give it a try. That's pretty amazing.
That's remarkable. This is going to sound like a total non sequitur, but in my brain, these are connected. And we know my brain, you know. One of the things I've been working at, and it's the last chapter of the book, has to do with living Sabbath. And the connection point for me here is a little bit like what Trinka, what you were saying, is like, I leave more relaxed, more rested, less anxious than I came, you know, to one of these meetings. It just feels like it's easier. And one of the things with Sabbath is the sense, and I know both of you have read before Abraham Heschel in the book, The Sabbath, like, and his idea of Menuha, like that, it's more than just like relax, like I had a rest. It means like creating a community of flow, like where everything is like in living in harmony with each other.
I'm also participating in a group that's reading Sacred Time together. And then out of that, I decided to read Living the Sabbath Holy for my Advent project. So
excellent.
I'm not at the end of the book yet. So I'm not really.
So when I say to you the question of right now in your life, what does it mean to you to take Sabbath seriously? Or how do you try to live Sabbath? What's your initial reaction to that question?
Yeah, I agree with
what do you try to do to live Sabbath?
Yeah, to make space for just to, you know, attend to the Spirit's movement in myself without having an agenda.
Which is kind of like what you're doing in Sociocracy too. And yeah.
I think for me, it's related to a practice of loving the world as it is, even as I long for change. And part of that change is related, I think, to systems I've been in that don't always have transparency around power and how that can be harmful sometimes, especially to people who are farthest away from that power. So I think Sabbath is knowing that that longing is something that God has placed in me, but that ultimately God is holding what I long for, and just touching in with that.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or are interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, anngarrido.com. I'd especially encourage you to listen to the interview I did with Casey Stanton in season one, who, like Joanne and Trinka, challenged me to think of convening using the images of circles rather than triangles. If you listen, you'll get what I mean here. Meanwhile, know I'm praying for you as this week you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and try to be the leader that God has called you to be in this world.